and welcome to another episode of the Right Side Podcast. I am Andrea Ruth, and I am here for another week, and Kimberly Ross is out this week again, but she will be back soon. But with us this week, is filling in for her, is Bridget Fedese. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. Bridget is a comedian and writer, and I believe one notorious person, I think it was, we've been watching this new show called Afterlife, and this one woman always refers to herself as sex worker, which I think recently we had, last week we talked about the whole thing about Denise McAllister, and I think somebody mentioned, I think it was Jay actually mentioned, he's like, oh yeah, he called Bridget a, for just having, even writing about, topics of sex, that it's like she called you a sex worker. It was just kind of like a funny background thing where it was one of those not interesting, but with what happened last week, or last weekend was.
I kind of missed all that.
I know you did.
I missed everything.
You did. Everybody, Jay and I were talking, and somebody said to me, they were like, oh, Bridget would just love this. Like the fact that she was being totally handed her lunch, but not. So Bridget, thank you for being here. And yes, you are not that, but you are a fantastic writer and comedian. And so I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, but we do have another friend of ours is Bethany Mandel, who is a homeschooler to three, almost four children, and part-time editor at Ricochet and writer. Thank you so much for being here, Bethany.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So you wrote a really interesting article this past week about homeschooling in the age of measles and having your, kids in a homeschool environment. And this is one of those things that I have dealt with in my own family, coming from Washington State, which is kind of like, like ground zero. Yes. for this stuff, coming from British, I lived right next to less than a mile from British Columbia, Washington State, and then also Southern California, which is where Bridget lives, that, we kind of all understand this kind of mentality that's happening. So do you want to kind of talk really quick about your article and what you were writing about and what interested you about this topic?
Yeah, so I mean it's been a topic of conversation in our family for a couple months now, because we're starting to put together our sort of homeschool plan for next year. My daughter is starting in grade one in the late fall. I think we're gonna start her in November, and we're sort of thinking like, what classes are we going to do? How are we going to, we have a wonderful problem in the DC area that there's too much to do and we need to cut back a little bit so that we have time to actually do school. Mm-hmm. And so we've been sort of negotiating about what classes we're going to continue and what classes we're going to cut. And I am uncomfortable in some of the homeschool classes because the some of the other families or whatever I know don't vaccinate, and we're having a new baby in July, and just trying to figure out like what classes can we keep, what classes are we going to drop, and sort of factoring in like I don't want to do an indoor class with homeschoolers, the majority of whom don't vaccinate, in the middle of a measles outbreak. And one of the things I said in the piece was, we chose a pediatrician based on vaccination. We had a friend had an experience where she was exposed to the measles in a waiting room. And when we loved our pediatrician, and we felt like we were going to move probably for a while before we ended up moving. And so we never switched pediatricians. But when we finally decided to move and we needed a new pediatrician, I said, this vaccination thing has to be mandatory. They have to, mm-hmm. they have to require vaccinations because I don't want to be exposed to the measles in a waiting room. And unfortunately, since I wrote that piece last week in the New York Times, the first case of the measles has happened in Maryland in, guess where? A pediatrician's waiting room. So it makes sense. Like that's the first place you go when you get sick is the pediatrician. So, and it's airborne for up to 2 hours. And so there were kids exposed in Baltimore at a pediatrician.
So crazy.
So,
I think You and I were talking about this, Bethany, when we were talking about your piece. And one of the things that it is interesting is the, you know, duty of these pediatricians to protect their other patients. Yeah. It seems like that should be the priority. And what is their justification for treating the kids that aren't vaccinated, those who do?
So I've heard it because I asked my old pediatrician many times, and they said there's kids involved. It's not the kids' fault that they are not vaccinated. It's their parents' fault. And they need to be treated for things. They need a regular doctor. And I understand that reasoning, and I'm sympathetic to it, but it's not my problem.
Right. It must be weird as a doctor, because your job, you know, you must be torn ethically between your duty to help patients in general and protect your patients from other diseases.
Yeah. Yeah.
The biggest issue is
the measles. Other stuff, whooping cough can sometimes be a concern, but it's not airborne the same way that the measles is. Mm-hmm. So my old pediatrician had a policy that anyone under the age of one, usually, you would check in and there was no time in the waiting room. You would just walk right through and you would sit in an exam room. But with the measles, that doesn't help because it's airborne. So walking through a waiting room where it's airborne, we're still exposed. And if we are assigned to exam room 5 and an hour prior there was a kid in it who had the measles, we're exposed to it in exam room 5, in the hallway going up to exam room 5. So I found
the elevator.
We didn't have one, but there's places in the building where it's airborne for 2 hours and they have to send things out to identify it. Like, they don't just shut down the office necessarily. They don't know for several days sometimes that kid ended up testing positive for the measles.
Right.
It wasn't good enough for me. Like, my old pediatrician was lovely and, great. And it was also, it was a problem with my old pediatrician because they accepted patients who didn't vaccinate and they would sort of read them the riot act every time they saw them. But most of I would say 98% of the people in town who didn't vaccinate went to a different doctor. And he was like a hippy dippy,
right?
Whatever. But then he stopped. He closed his practice, and the only pediatrician in town who wouldn't require it became my pediatrician. So there was an exodus, and so my pediatrician went from having 4 families to having dozens.
Right.
Yeah, I go back to when my daughter was young, and this is not super similar, but my daughter ended up having chickenpox at 8 months old because I was still in college at that point and got a notification that someone had come to the health center with the chickenpox, and I ended up it was right around midterm time, and so I only went there the one time or maybe 2 times, and I was like, I must have caught it in the student union when I walked through there to get a sandwich or something, but I ended up with shingles. And by the time that my then fiance had been helping me treat my shingles, he thought that he had had chicken pox, and we didn't, and so he ended up with chicken pox, and he was the one at that point. We were like, okay, we have to keep her away from me. And then he came up down with the chicken pox. And then my daughter, who was only 8 months, would have been vaccinated at a year for chicken pox. And so you are coming up with very, you know, people don't understand, like, these are immunocompromised little people. It's very serious. And I don't think I really, appreciate, I mean, I always appreciated vaccines, but I really saw it up close. Like, oh my goodness, this adult person, ostensibly going to a university where they checked into a wellness center at the university and came down, you know, was tested positive for chickenpox, and then was walking around campus during the, you know, when it's incubating, which is a 10-day period, and, you know, and then, you know, affected who knows how many people. It's like, when the vaccine had been around at that point for at least 10 years, if not 15 by that time. So, I mean, I do understand, like, I come from the days of, you know, because I was born in 1982, being a part of the chicken pox party, you know, age and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's like, and my younger sister is a semi anti-vaxxer. She doesn't have kids. But you know, I did have one of those conversations with her when my daughter was really young. I was like, if you get married and have kids, and you don't immunize them, your kids aren't playing with my daughter. So it was, I'm sure and you bring up in your article, like, you know, that you do think that, you know, as much as conservatives believe in non-regulation in a lot of areas, like, this is one of those areas that we, you know, conservatives do believe in certain types of regulation that do enforce, you know, especially the health of quote unquote the herd, and keeping everybody healthy. So when you are kind of dealing, when you come in, you know, you talked about in your article that you were going to be deciding, you know, which groups to go to, and especially, you know, the county parks and things like that, putting on summer camps and day camps and things like that. And I'm just stepping into this whole camp mentality, because just moving from the West Coast to the East Coast, my daughter will be here for a month this summer, and I'm kind of thinking about putting her into a day camp for a week just so that she can make some friends here. And I'm getting to the point where I'm just like, I've never had to do this, because I've always been in places where it was just everybody was already known to have their immunizations because she was doing school activities. And,
right.
And so how do you broach that topic of having to ask people, like, are your kids vaccinated?
So
that's gotta be a landmine.
That's the question.
Ask other parents?
I haven't. They often volunteer it just in the course of conversation.
Because it's like, and are like joining CrossFit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
They're just like,
you know, yes. They're like, we don't, you know, we eat really healthy, all organic. I'm like, really? You think that like people 200 years ago didn't eat organic? And yet somehow everyone still died of the measles. So maybe like there's a little more to it than eating organic. But so they tell you. And so I have a fairly good idea of who does and who doesn't.
Right.
But the problem is also like, some people will in the co-op and some people don't. So I think that I've decided for next year, we'll keep the drop-off classes where my oldest goes in a drop-off. And she washes her hands when we get home anyway. So it is what it is. We'll keep some of the outdoor stuff. But any classes that are in close quarters that I have to stay with a baby, we're dropping for the next year. And then we'll see sort of what's happening with the measles outbreaks. My third kid, we got him vaccinated early for the measles. We got him vaccinated at 9 months because we were going to San Francisco, which has the vaccination rates of a third world country. So so we bumped up his schedule. My old pediatrician, they were vaccinating at 15 months, and most people do it at 12, but my pediatrician, just their schedule was a little wonky and they did it at 15. And I asked him, can we bump it up to 9? And he said, yeah, no problem at all. So we vaccinated him at 9 months. The only downside to that was then we had to vaccinate him again. Mm-hmm. For the measles, which, you know, sucked, but it's better than getting the measles.
Yeah.
So we'll see sort of what's happening with the outbreaks at that point. But if she hits 9 months and it's still doing what it's doing right now, we'll vaccinate her early, just like we did to her brother.
What cracks me up is the arrogance of anti-vaxxers just in general, because I've been always joking about them online, and then I'll get attacked by a group of anti-vaxxers and they get so angry about being shunned. And I'm like, guys, this is like basic evolutionary biology. You are bringing disease into the herd. So fine, make your dumb decision that you based on Googling a bunch of stuff and going on YouTube, but don't expect the herd to be cool with it.
That's really my I'm like, this is some audacity, guys. And the other thing that's funny about being in a town like LA, where there's tons of these like rich anti-vaxxers, they're like, first of all, you're vaccinated. Usually these mm-hmm. parents who aren't vaccinating their kids, which is, I mean, you want to like get into a conversation about privilege. And secondly, they're all getting like Botox, and I'm like, you yes. are shooting botulism into your face and you don't want to give your kid a freaking vaccination because it's toxic. Get the hell out of here.
Cause they don't want, because they believe that vaccines cause autism, and they don't want to have to deal with a handicapped child. And that's what I think, like, as far, and here's the thing. And I'm, this is my younger sister is one of my best friends. And I think that that's honestly what she feels. And that's why I've always kind of, you know, been like, I'm so glad you didn't get married and have kids. You know, it's like, in a way, I mean, she would have been a great mom. At the same time, like, her ideas on this stuff were so kooky that I couldn't, you know, it was hard for me to kind of reconcile, like, okay, you this wouldn't have been a good idea for you to have kids anyway. When now, on a personal level, I actually did grow up with my mom's best friend in high school, married a chiropractor, which back in the 80s, chiropractor, you know, that's very like, and it was Pacific Northwest, that was very crunchy granola lifestyle. And they did not vaccinate any of their five children. And she, to this day, is a friend of, she's a friend of mine and my mother's on Facebook. And we're all, you know, it's like, I haven't seen them in a few years, but at the same time, it's like, I grew up with these kids. And she will, and whenever I post something about, or you know, post something about, you know, the measles outbreaks or the anti-vaxxers in Washington State, she'll be like, well, my kids never caught anything. And I always sit there and think, because all of us were vaccinated.
Right.
You didn't have your like, kids.
Because your kids were the five original morons that didn't get vaccinated.
Which I love their family. I love their kids. But it's just like, it's like you're completely missing the point that the herd protected your children.
Right.
Because right. we were all vaccinated. And so... Yeah,
it's interesting too in this discussion, because I have, you know, we have this whole idea of like everyone has to tell their own story and we need to believe people's stories, which whatever is a whole separate conversation. But this is one area where I understand that, you know, when parents get their kids vaccinated and then the kids do something does happen, why don't we listen to them or deny them their experience? And I have had friends who their kids have gotten really sick, even close family members. But then they got, you know, it's like the kid kind of, you know, getting vaccinated, like they get sick and they build up. My one friend said that her child screamed for like 24 hours and she was terrified, but then she was fine.
That's like some next level BS kind of, you know, experience your own truth. I wouldn't want to take this experience away from my child. Like that is next level. Like, well, I wouldn't want my child to not go through cancer because they wouldn't be the person that they are today without having experienced childhood leukemia. Like, I mean, that's me
just crying like that. I'm sorry. Like all of my oldest kid has had reactions like that. And I wouldn't call them reactions. Like, yeah, kids' bodies sometimes like
freak out.
Yeah, shots can suck. But you know what sucks more is the freaking measles.
No, mm-hmm. I agree. I'm only offering the perspective of what I've heard, just what I've heard.
Yeah, it's just like it's frustrating because like my two sons got a version of the measles from the measles shot. And I got it also when I was a kid. And it's like I think it's like 5% of kids develop the measles from the measles shot, and I did and my two sons did. And when it happened to me, my mom brought me to the doctor furious because I'm like covered in the measles rash. And I've seen it on my sons. Like my sons have been covered in the measles rash from the measles shot. Mm-hmm. And when my mom brought me to the doctor, she was like, what the hell? This was the whole point of the freaking shot. Why is she covered in a rash? And he said, you know what that tells me? Tells me that she was very susceptible to the virus, so susceptible that she got the measles from the measles shot, but she got a practically dead version of the virus, mm-hmm. and she'll be fine. She'll be uncomfortable mm-hmm. for a few days. She'll have a low-grade fever, and she'll be fine, mm-hmm. and then she'll be immune. If she had gotten the real thing, we would be having this conversation in like an intensive care unit.
Right.
And I think that about my sons. Like, both my sons got the measles from the measles shot, and they were miserable. Mm-hmm. And I look at how miserable they were from the measles shot, and I'm like, you just got like a tenth of what the real measles is. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what the real thing would have done to you, because this sucks. Like, we didn't do anything for several days. Like, they were miserable, and they had a very, 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 very mild case of the measles from the measles shot. And I think about it. I think about, like, and that's what makes me so honestly terrified of the measles, because two of my three kids have gotten sick from the measles shot. And I've seen it. And it's no mm-hmm. joke. Mm-hmm. I don't want 10 times that strength of the measles.
It is kind of insane how we get about two generations out from any type of illness and suddenly start romanticizing it. I mean, 1918, 1919, more people died from the flu than they did in World War I. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I also, my own grandmother, my dad's mother, was born in 1935 and contracted polio. She was from a very small town in southeastern Kentucky that where polio, like Mitch McConnell growing up in southeastern Kentucky, mm-hmm. very, you know, that was still a frequent disease that was rampant around there. And my grandmother at, I think, around preteen age, you know, got sent away to a quarantine hospital on her own. And it was, you know, it's one of those things. And so I sit there and I say to my, you know, to my, like I said, this, because this hits very home to me with my younger sister, I always think to myself, like, my younger sister should be one of the most sympathetic people to polio. Like, polio was something, now it's essentially eradicated. And mm-hmm. except for in, you know, they always say India is kind of the last, it's the last holdout for polio, but they're making great strides over there with polio. But at the same time, back in the 1940s and 50s, polio was still a rampant disease in very poor areas of the country. And it is kind of one of these things that you sit there and you say, you're only a generation or two out from these diseases being horribly deadly, and yet you're romanticizing them as, oh, well, we used to, and now, you know, people say immune compromised, they were vaccine compromised. It's like, I'm sorry, your kid looks totally fine. I'm sorry that it had, you know, that your child got a little sick, or maybe a lot sick, from having, you know, a series of vaccinations, but the fact that they're running around and totally fine right now shows that they were not vaccine compromised in yeah. a way that is. And I think that that's very, like, nouveau conservative almost, like, and that's the next thing I wanted to kind of talk about. But go ahead, Bridget.
Oh, I think some people talk too about, like, my kid was speaking and then they lost all their language after their vaccines. That I've heard that as, like, vaccine. What do they call it? Vaccine sickness
injury. Or
injury. Thank mm-hmm. you. What is the science on that? Is there science on this?
No. I mean, that kind of thing, the problem is it's the chicken or the egg, and those kinds of things happen around the ages where these vaccines happen. You're getting
right,
vaccines
exactly,
all
exactly.
the time. But I've heard of people saying, like, my kid got the shot and then they lost all their speech. I'm like, oh, like, what, when? And it was like 2 months later. I'm like, I don't think that was related. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't. It's been studied to the moon and back, and there's no correlation between autism and vaccines or any of these kind of developmental, except for seizures in a very, 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 very small number of kids, where it's not justified to not vaccinate everyone. Kids can react with a seizure, and seizures carry inherent neurological risks. But outside of that, it's all kind of baloney. And I'm sorry that people have had these experiences, but kids that are vaccinated and kids that are not vaccinated, the research actually shows that that you are more at risk of being diagnosed with autism if you have not been vaccinated.
Right.
That's the latest research.
That's insane. And yeah, when my daughter was around three, She, you know, had her last round of like her last big round of shots, right? It was around when they're two and a half. And she, and about 6 months later started, you know, when she was about almost three-ish, started stuttering. Like, and it went on for about 2 months where this horrible stuttering. And my sister, who doesn't have kids, and I only have the one kid. And so she says to me, she's like, are you sure that's it? Cause I was really worried about it. I'm like, she's all of a sudden gone from like saying words to now she's stuttering horribly. And my sister was like, well, that's probably from her having too many vaccines all at once. And I was like, being taken aback when someone says something to you, you take it as, okay, why would this person lie to me or say something that wasn't true? Especially someone who's educated and irrational, what you think is a rational adult. So I went and looked it up, and no, when kids are between 2.5 to 3.5 years old, they, a lot of times, if their verbal skills aren't catching up with their what they want to say compared to what skills they have in speaking, they will start to stutter. And when her younger half sister did the exact same thing at the exact same age 4 years later, I was like, okay, it's probably just something to do with her dad's family. Like, they just kind of exceed their, like, not to just brag on my child as being, you know, exceptionally, you know, like that she's smart or anything like that, but she was just trying to express herself in a way that she didn't have words for, and so she would start to stutter. And apparently, when I started reading more of that, which is actually proven in childhood psychology and stuff like that, that kids will start to stutter at around 2 to 3 years old, and then it'll suddenly go away after 4 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened to her. It was not anything that I needed to start crying and being upset over. But when you have new moms and especially anxious mothers, which I didn't ever think of myself as being that, but when someone sits there and tells you, oh, well, maybe it's because of vaccines, and you're sitting there going like, is this ever going to go away? It's
shouldn't they
very
be treating
anxiety.
Like flat earthers? I mean, am I wrong? isn't being an anti-vaxxer kind of in the same vein? It's so just observably disproven science that these vaccines don't work.
I mean, the problem is they don't. I mean, yes, the answer to your question is yes, but they don't trust. Like, no matter, and I've had these conversations a million times in mommy Facebook groups. Any science you throw at them, they're like, that person works for XYZ, and that's big pharma.
Right. And I'm like, totally. It's all like conspiracy theories.
Yeah, it's all conspiracy theories, and there's no reasoning with that. I think that there's low hanging fruit in the sort of anti-vax community of people. I think just sort of observationally, I think at least half and maybe up to 80% of people who don't vaccinate aren't these like hardcore crazy people. They are just nervous. Mm-hmm. And they see this list of diseases, and it's like diphtheria and hep B and hep A and the mumps, and they're just like, well, I've never heard of that, and I've heard that there's some controversy about vaccines, and I would rather be safe than sorry.
Right.
And
I understand the fear. It's just, it's still like, I don't know. They wouldn't be afraid of using chemo, which comes from Big Pharma, if suddenly their kid was diagnosed
and
with
so
cancer.
I think that sort of mandating vaccines in pediatricians' offices would take all of that low-hanging fruit off, because if people were faced with the choice of my kid doesn't have a doctor, and if they get an ear infection, I have to go to an ER, mm-hmm. versus, you know, I'm just, okay, I guess I just have to trust them, they will go for trusting them. The problem is, with my argument, is that there will still be people who will say, you know what? All right, screw the whole medical establishment, and I won't bring my kids to the doctor anymore, and I'll just go to the ER for everything. They might expose an entire ER, and that happened. I have to look it up, but that happened this week too. An entire ER was exposed to the measles because someone went to the ER with the measles.
Yeah, that's aren't a you supposed to like call? Too. Yeah, if you have the measles, aren't you supposed to? If you think it's even the measles, aren't you supposed to call in advance so that they can quarantine the patient?
But these people don't know.
Right.
Like, when I brought my both my sons have had quote unquote, the measles. They right. weren't contagious. But the first time it happened, I brought him to the doctor and I'm like, he's covered in a head to toe in a rash. And it never occurred to me that it was measles. Right. I've never seen the measles. And it still, by the way, could have been the real measles because the first shot only gives you like 60 to 80% immunity. And it's only with the second shot that you really get the whole enchilada. Mm. But I saw it on my second kid and I brought him to the doctor and I was like, does he have Coxsackie? Like what is like, that's like hand, foot and mouth. I'm like, cause he's covered in a rash. It looks like Coxsackie. And the doctor was like, no, that's actually a measles. And I was like, well, that's BS. Cause you just vaccinated him for that. And she was like, yeah, that's why. That's why he has the measles. He's got the measles from the measles shot.
Yeah.
Right. So the third time, like my third kid, the second time it happened, I recognized it.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. Now I know this is the measles from the measles shot.
That's why we need to have, like, people need to have more than the two, than like the 1.5 kids at this point, because like my mother had three kids and she always said the first one's crystal, the second one's glass, and the third one's rubber. Like you kind of get very into kind of what, okay, I've been through this before, I know what's going on, and you kind of get a little bit less anxious about, and because, and I've seen articles about, you know, that the fact that we, so you know, the result of helicopter parenting is caused by the fact that we only have 1 to 2 kids nowadays, and so we're very protective of them. But Bethany, I did want to ask you, just as a concern, like the idea, this whole vaccine choice thing is kind of derivative of, and at least a lot of it seems to be, you know, they all say, oh, well, school choice type thing. And then they go into, oh, well, it all goes into vaccine choice. And they're kind of trying to bring the same arguments that of school choice into vaccine choice. And it seems to be kind of like a mixed bag, if you want to go, like, if you want to look at it that way, that this conservative idea of school choice is then people that want to not vaccinate their kids want to try and bring these ideas of school choice into the vaccine choice movement idea. And those are totally different concepts.
Yeah, they're totally different. I mean, this is a public health crisis that is recognized by the World Health Organization as one of the top 10 threats to global health this year. And school choice, like, yes, I guess you're taking money out of the public school system, but I honestly think that if enough people are opting out and it's affecting their bottom line, it's going to force the public school system to shape up. I don't see it as a negative. If they are being deprived of funding in some way, it's like, maybe you should take the hint. Because as of now, there's no reflexive market forcing public school systems to recalibrate and to take the hint. But it's just, I mean, this is the only issue that I can think of outside of driving drunk, where your personal choices could so direly affect an untold number of people.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
And we regulate that. Mm-hmm. You can't drive drunk. And by the way, you can't not wear a seatbelt, and you can't not put your kid in a car seat. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not a government intervention person, and it makes me queasy thinking that the government could mandate parents putting shots into their children when they have objections. But I'm sort of quickly coming to terms with the fact that that might be necessary. And it's not unprecedented given the laws that we have about driving drunk and driving with a seatbelt. And I mean, I think the closest is like, if you drove drunk with your kid not in a car seat, you would do time. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what this is. You're driving drunk and you could kill people on the road and you haven't secured your own child in the process.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great analogy that people should really think about when they're not vaccinating their kids, and then get, you know, take umbrage to the fact that, oh, well, I'm doing with my child what I choose to do. It's like, but that's not, you know, it's different than, you know, not wanting your child to go to, you know, public school sex ed, things like that. you know.
And I would again say, okay, you're making that choice, so you need to accept that there will be consequences, like right. you can't go places. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't agree with the choice, but if you are making that choice, and the other thing that's so illogical is you're so worried about your kid getting autism or whatever, but then you should at least be educated about what the measles look like if you're not vaccinating your kid for them, or whooping cough. You should at least know what's going around and how to maybe identify that might be happening if your child is not vaccinated. That seems like something you would want to know if you're
and the thing that frustrates me about this, and I've read this a lot in sort of the autism community, is how intensely insulting it is to people with autism that they use autism as an excuse for not vaccinating. And it's like, no, don't pull my neurodiversity into your crap. I am a perfectly functional, I mean, it's called a spectrum for a reason. There is a huge spectrum of autism experiences. And part of there's so many different aspects of how autism has been vilified. That's a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. But this anti-vaccine movement really vilifies and sort of ghettoizes autistic people, mm-hmm. when it's not a death sentence.
No.
It's not a death sentence for parents. It's not a death sentence for children. It's something that has been around since the beginning of humanity. And autism is actually like, so there's an organization called Autism Speaks, and one of their things is they want to cure autism. And without denying the fact that there are people who are severely disabled with autism, there are also people on the spectrum who have created pretty much every scientific advantage that we enjoy. Mm-hmm. Like all of Silicon Valley is on the spectrum.
So I worked with these kids for like almost a decade, and some nonverbal, some on the Asperger side, all different sides. And I hate when they're put in this, like you said, it's like the whole thing of autism is demonized in a way, like, oh, this is what we're so afraid of, because these kids are they're magic. Like I cannot tell you the weird, crazy, ethereal. I'm convinced they're tapped into like another sense that we don't have.
They are. So it's funny, as we're talking, I'm browsing Facebook because I'm a total jerk and I'm sorry.
But you've been remarkably engaged for browsing Facebook. So maybe you're just like not an engaged Facebook browser.
She has three kids.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I multitask really well.
Yeah.
So I'm browsing Facebook right now, and I'm reading this book called The Omnivore's Dilemma. It's like a 10-year-old book, and I'm just getting around to it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
And so he talks about this farm that's like 3 hours away from me called Polyface Farm. And it's like this incredible farm that it's like this whole sort of circular sort of ecosystem. And so like the birds eat the cow poop, and it's just like he doesn't need fertilizers in the same way as traditional farms, whatever. So I just liked their page on Facebook, and as we're talking, and he posted an event, a day at the farm with Temple Grandin.
Oh yeah.
Temple is, she's severely autistic, mm-hmm. and she designed because she's severely autistic, not despite the fact that she's severely autistic, because she's severely autistic, she designed pretty much every piece of machinery in cow slaughtering mm-hmm. slaughterhouses in the country. She's designed everything because she has a brain that can visualize it, and so she maps it all out in her head, and she has sort of a 3D architectural mind that we don't have. And mm-hmm. so she designs literally every piece of cow slaughter equipment in the country, basically, and she is the expert on it. Mm-hmm. And so when she, and I've read her books, and she's talked about how frustrating it was talking to people without autism who were doing the same thing in her industry, because they would design something and she was like, no, that will break. Mm-hmm. And when she was first starting on the industry, people treated her like crap because she was autistic and she's clearly very disabled. And people were like, who the hell are you? Like this, like I will say it, like this retarded woman telling us what to do. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, I don't care what you're saying. That will break and it could kill someone. And they didn't listen to her. They didn't listen to her. And they designed whatever they wanted the way they wanted to. And lo and behold, she was right. And she was like, I give this 2 weeks before it falls off the ceiling. And within like 10 days, the thing that they designed fell off the ceiling and 1,000-pound cows came raining from the sky, and it almost killed people. And then all of her colleagues, and every single day, like leading up to it, she's like, it's going to break. I wouldn't stand under that. And she just like kept on saying it. And then when it broke, they were like, oh, how'd you know? And she's like, because I can see things that you can't. Mm-hmm. I have a different mind. And so she's like revolutionized cow slaughter in this country because of her autism, not in spite of it.
Right. It's like this kid that I worked with, he used to play video games. And he would go to the boundary of the entire video game, like wherever the end of the game was, the designers conceived of. And then he would walk the entire perimeter of the game before he started playing the game. And then he would like easily beat the game every time. It was insane to watch, but he just had a different brain.
It's a different brain. And I read this incredible book by Steve Silberman called Neurotribes, which I super highly recommend if you have anyone in your general periphery who is in any way on the spectrum. I recommend this book so highly. It was probably the best book that I read last year, Neurotribes, Steve Silberman. And he talks about the history of autism and what we used to do with autistic kids, but also just like when given the space to be their own people. In history, autistic people like changed science and changed design, and like without that neurodiversity in our gene pool, while sometimes it can go a little too far on the spectrum and it can be debilitating, there's so many people that are on the spectrum who have made humanity what it is. And this anti-vaxxer conversation where autism is viewed as basically like terminal cancer is so unfair to
the autistic community.
To the autistic community. And and I've seen so many people be like, stop doing that, please. Like, this is not a death sentence. And like This is sort of what we think of as autism is this death sentence, and it's really not.
Yeah, no, I
but can't. You know what it is? The measles.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it can be. I mean, you even look at things that like, you know, typhoid fever, the things that used to like will actually kill people. That is just crazy that we're not less concerned about, you know, the things that will actually kill us you can even go to things, I mean, as far out, I mean, not to get too far off topic, and I'm not trying to bring this up, but like, you know, people saying that, you know, when you try to sit there and say that kids should not be scared to go to school, you know, they're safer at school than they are, you know, driving to school type of thing. You know, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, why do we not have kind of like a realization of what's actually happening here of just scaremongering and people being afraid for being afraid's sake. And it is kind of just an it's a very first world concerns, especially when you know, for anyone who's ever been to, which I think all three of us have been to, you know, quote unquote third world countries, these are not things that people are worried about. You have other things to worry about. But Bridget, before we leave, I wanted to really quick, you have a piece coming up in the Washington Examiner, and I wanted you to just quickly like tell us what it's going to be about, just to kind of, so everybody can go and pick up the magazine and see what you're writing about, because I think that the topic is really, because I'm sure that we're going to be dealing, you know, with a podcast about vaccinations and three people that are like, why aren't you getting your kids vaccinated? We might actually become a victim of one of these mobs that you're talking about.
Yeah, speaking of which, this segues nicely into my piece about the mob. I mean, really, I've been really interested in this idea of self-censorship, and that kind of leads me always to one thing, which is that we've been essentially living under mob law since about 2013, by my estimation. This is when, like, Justine Sacco, the one who made the bad joke, and by the time her plane landed, her life was destroyed. I don't know if you guys remember Justine.
I don't know how you can forget that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was really new to Twitter when that happened, and so I remember
when that was going down, and I was one of the people that felt very much like, this is really bad, guys. What we're doing is, this is so bad. I had such a visceral reaction to her thing in particular. And I don't know, I moved every year and a half, and I was always the new girl. And I think I'm very sensitive to mob mentality in general. I don't trust groups of people generally. And I felt like, I think being the outsider and constantly being bullied at every new school that I went to, and I went to 3 8th grades. Mm. And so I'm sensitive to that mentality, I think, maybe hypersensitive to it. I was just reading this book, Irresistible, about screen addiction, which I highly recommend everybody get. But he was talking about...
Can I read it on my Kindle?
Yeah, I think you can.
I'm screwing with you.
I think it was funny. I heard it. He gave a talk on Calm, and I was, you know, I've gone down this rabbit hole of like, okay, what is screen addiction and social media addiction since I've been offline? And he talks about how on Netflix in particular, they have the just autoplay where you don't. That was one of these big changes they made that changed the way that we. Take our media in and the bottomlessness of it. But ironically, this 3-part series on Calm just rolled right into the next series without a break. And in the little comments, I was like, it's not I can't help but notice the irony that these just rolled into one another, one after another. But he was talking about like social, I can't remember the exact term. I was just reading it last night, but essentially it defines kind of what I've always called as new girl syndrome, which is people who have been ostracized socially. It's some of the most intense damage, and it's some of the trauma that sticks with us the longest. People remember it long after it happened. And we have this now, we wield these social media mobs, and it's interesting because there are times where, you know, people will push back and say, but for instance, the people who marched in Charlottesville and didn't have masks and the tiki torches dudes, a lot of them were doxxed and the mob went after them. Is that a bad thing? I'm asking you guys. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. So I don't love it. I don't love it. I wrote a piece that I had some specific reasoning. People called me a Nazi. That's like a general... like rule of thumb in my life. I mean I am a Nazi. I'm like the OG
literal Nazi.
but I don't love it. I think that the goal should be to de-radicalize these people. Yep. and I think that getting them fired from, I remember my reasoning, getting them fired from jobs where it's just irrelevant. Like if they work at like the drive-through at Wendy's, who cares if your drive-through guy is a Nazi? Mm-hmm. Really, honestly, mm-hmm. Who cares? Mm-hmm. But making him unemployed is just going to radicalize him more.
Right.
I just don't, I don't see the benefit to that. If your kids kindergarten teacher is a Nazi, it wouldn't hurt to know that. But
it's interesting too, because the mob is often wrong.
And I think I mentioned that also. There was there's a million instances of this, but there was the Zimmer address that Chris Rock tweeted that was wrong, and people were getting death threats. There was the original what was it? It was the Sandy Hook shooter. They said his brother's name instead of his name in the beginning.
Yeah.
And he was, he's still like getting death threats and stuff.
So have you read the book?
So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson. It is a classic.
It's so good. And he, what's, I think in the space that, you know, Bethany, you occupy, we all occupy it a little bit online, where you're basically taking hits at everyone and just calling the shots as you see them. And you're not necessarily identified too much with one of the extreme tribes, is that you like, and the point of my article is a mob is a mob is a mob. They all think they're different and they all feel righteous and justified in their behavior. And they all think that everybody else behave, they are quick to victimize themselves when they're attacked by a mob. And yet so, cannot see that they do the exact same thing when they join a mob. Mm-hmm.
So here's my question to you, Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I joined a mob against Denise McAllister this past week?
I missed all of this. So
yeah, but you got a Cliff Notes version.
You
can weigh in.
So here's my
So the backstory is she tweeted something intensely homophobic at Yashar Ali, who is a liberal journalist. I don't even know if he's liberal. So that's not a nice thing. I don't know if he's liberal.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's great, especially
New Yorker.
And he worked for Gavin Newsom for 6 years. But
I'm just gonna assume he's liberal. But he's fair.
But he's very fair. Yeah.
Nice guy.
So she tweeted something intensely homophobic.
We're like, he's liberal, but he's fair.
But there was no gray area. She was tweeting homophobic garbage at him. And so I piled on.
Well,
do you think I was part of a mob? Do you think I should have piled on?
I don't know the history either, because I feel like there was something. Didn't you mention something on Twitter about your husband? She said something.
My husband? Yeah.
Okay, so this is
I put that in my back pocket of, like, I will get my revenge. And I did.
And I will feel like in this instance, because you have something personal, it muddies the waters a little bit for me.
Yeah.
Because
anyone who says really anything against my husband, I have Irish Alzheimer's about my husband. When people do that to my husband, I'm like, I'm gonna file that ish away.
I'm the same way.
I will get you.
I don't get
that way about myself the same way, because I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like 90% of Twitter has called me a Nazi.
Yeah.
But like, my husband is like the nicest guy on the planet. And if you come from him, I will sit on it for a year and then I will cut your throat.
I'm a crazy.
And that's what I did to Denise McAllister.
Yeah. And that's the area where I'm a little bit, and I always joke about this, is that I have like an, I have my, when you kind of scorn me or like, anyone close to me, I'm Irish and Italian, and I'm like, it's like a tiny little mafia awakens in my heart, and they're like, you're dead to me. And I'm patient. I will wait. You know,
she went after you also was another thing that I was like, I'm going to file that one in my back pocket, because you're an like objectively evil person.
And just to be clear, that's what I was taught. So everybody who's listening, what I said at the very beginning where it was kind of awkward and I felt bad because I realized that Bridget's not on Twitter. And so she did. When I said like,
I didn't feel Denise like she lost her jobs.
Oh, she lost them all. Yeah.
And
that was the thing. Like Bridget's not a sex worker. The thing that Denise called her was like something like along those lines.
No, she called me a sex worker.
Oh, did she? Okay. Yeah.
That's a direct quote.
Yeah.
And generally, you know, and it's funny because here I am talking about a mob as a mob, and then I talk about how a mob will awaken in my heart,
but
and
I
I'll
think
be
there
like,
is
you're
a
dead to me.
But I think there is a personal, when there is a personal aspect to something, you like, you know, it's like, my fiance Jay is not a non-public figure. If someone said something or did something to him, I would absolutely. And you know, it's like, I've been in the position of also not to like, you know, toot myself as some kind of like great humanitarian or anything like that, but I've actually had to live in an assisted living facility for 7 months of my life. And I was appalled by the way, and I also worked before I had to do that when I was in college. I also worked in an assisted living facility as a front desk person. I was appalled at the way that people were treated. But I've also now, you know, in 2010 had to live 7 months of that. And I would get so angry at the people who were, you know, stroke victims who could not advocate for themselves. That makes me so angry. And it does make you file it away as in your, you know, something you're going to react to immediately, which when I lived in the assisted living facility, when I saw injustices and things that needed to be like dealt with right away, that was something I was much more quick to discuss those things on someone else's behalf than I was on my own. And I honestly, like, I'm one of those people that kind of like stands back from any kind of, you know, conflict on Twitter because I can't handle, and Jay always tells me, he's like, why would you tweet that? You won't be able to handle the blowback. And so I'm like, yeah, I won't be able to. So I just don't tweet controversial. You know, right. It's like, I don't get involved in things. But when someone says something mean about him, I will file it away and be like, I don't like that woman. I don't like that guy. Like, you know, it becomes very personal because they're saying something about someone that you know, either know or value or admire or respect or love or all five of those things. I don't, maybe four or five of those things, but it does become something that I think that a pile on when it's personal is right. Totally and
it's
different.
That's the thing is it's one thing when it's just a like random pile on like Justine Sacco. No one knew her. That was just a crazy online pile on where it almost is. And that was the interesting thing in that book is that you lose your ability to think for yourself mm-hmm. when you're in a mob. And you see this. I mean, I was at a show and it was a bluegrass show of all things, Devil Makes Three. But for some reason, all the kids these days are filled with rage and they were moshing at this show. And I kept getting bumped from behind. And I was like, I'm too old for this crap. And I kept getting bumped and bumped and bumped. And then the girls around me started kind of throwing elbows and I don't drink anymore. So, but then after a couple of bumps, I was like ready to fight. You know, there was that part of me that I felt being activated in my brain of like, yeah, I could easily like throw in and get in on this. And it would actually feel probably really good to just throw some elbows around. And that was interesting to observe. You know, had I been drinking, I don't know that I would have been able to be present enough to observe that. But I see this a lot online where people, you can sense the frenzy and sense when people are kind of caught up in this. And again, it's very different when it's somebody, what is the line between piling on and defending somebody that if somebody came after either one of you, you're friends of mine in real life. I would, and if somebody came after you online, I'm intensely protective of my friends and family, intensely. And I'm not apologetic about that. But would I want like every random stranger on the internet to pile on somebody? It's interesting. It's interesting when it is personal because it does bring up a good question of I was glad I wasn't online when all this stuff was going on with DC because it was kind of personal for me and I didn't even have to make a choice of whether or not I would partake, but I don't know that I even from the beginning of that whole situation, I felt like I just shouldn't.
Which is an amazing point because the way that whole thing started was it was personal for Meghan McCain when Denise called her co-host, whom she frequently, you know, talks about how much she loves and respects them.
Meghan too. I don't think that was just about her co-host. I think it was about Meghan.
Yeah.
Did she make t-shirts?
It was her picture. Yeah, she made t-shirts about it.
Yeah, she made t-shirts about it and then denigrated and called and in the t-shirt ad called that said mentioned over and over again that it was someone who was spoiled who says something like that.
You don't get to own your like own.
Yeah. No. And she then she started like tweeting like crap about Meghan like, "Oh, well she can't ever take a criticism." Da, da, da. And it's like, "I'm sorry, pot meat kettle." Because you, whatever. I'm not going to relitigate this.
Right. Yeah.
But it was a hit against Meghan, and it was like, it's astounding to me that, and this is not just Denise. This is a lot of other people. It's astounding to me, in politics, that there are people who work in politics who are so bad at it. Like I had a situation last week where someone on a giant listserv talked crap about my husband and Seth and I are both on the listserv. And
wow.
I was like, bad call because now you're on my shit list. Oh, sorry. Was I supposed to curse? You can bleep
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you can. No, you can totally curse. Yeah.
Okay. I've been careful up until this point.
I have too. I've been remarkably impressed with Bethany and I's restraint.
There were several times where both of us paused.
Yeah. I told Bethany a couple weeks ago at her when she graciously hosted everybody for dinner. I was like, I used to swear like a sailor, and then I suddenly like turned a certain age, and I was just like, not that I care that other people swear, and I swear in private, but in front of other people, I've just totally stopped it. Like, and I don't know why. It's not like I'm a prude.
Anyway, so this person is now on my list. And I, as we've established, I'm not someone you want to be on my list. And the, like, jobs that I used to send this person's way are not going to be sent that way anymore. The op-eds that I don't have time to write that I think that she would have written better, I'm not gonna pass her name on to editors anymore. Like, she is on my list. And it is astounding to me, on a giant listserv, even if you don't know that we are also on the listserv, that you don't talk crap about people who you might need their help at some point. You just don't, like, there's no point in making enemies out of otherwise nice people. Mm-hmm. And, like, it just boggles my mind that people who work in politics are so bad at it that they're like, you know what, I'm going to light this bridge on fire for no reason. Just gonna do it.
Weird. It feels self-destructive.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I think it's stupid. I think it's just people don't game it out. And I think that they should probably find a new line of work.
I don't think people realize how small ever. It's like, do you not realize how small things are? I mean, there was, I had stuff getting back to me from DC by like Saturday from Friday. And I'm like, you guys, like, you do not know how small this town is. Everybody talks. It's just weird to be talking smack openly about people. It's strange. I don't,
small world.
But I'm like you, Bethany. I'm definitely like, file that one away. You have an enemy and you don't even know it.
Oh, they know it.
that is the fun part where there's the people who know and the people who don't. Like, I mean,
I think we've established, if anything, that we're a mob.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's okay. So we're our own.
More than anything, we've come full circle, and I'm like, oh, by the way, let me talk about like how bad the mob mentality is, but let me introduce you to my mob.
Yeah. No, I think if Kim was here, like, we would both probably agree that, like, you know, we made plenty of like not very friendly people when we exited Salem a couple months ago. So it's one of those like weird instances where you're just kind of like, you know, that was just something that happened, but it's something that you sit there and you say, like, there was a great many people who were, you know, either, you know, affected negatively or greatly in the positive by, you know, whatever actions you take. And a lot of times you don't realize them until after you've done them. And so it's one of those kind of like tricky situations that, you know, work. And like Bethany said, you know, working in politics, it's amazing how many people are just bad at it. And sometimes I will admit I can be bad at it too. I'm not like the most like judicious person at times in the past with what I've said and who I've offended.
I'm new to this beat. I fell ass backwards into it. I know nothing. I find it interesting that Game of Thrones is like more popular than ever, not just because it's great, but it is a very Games of Thronesian time. It does feel intensely tribal.
Yeah, I know nothing about, you know, we've had conversations, Jay and I have had conversations about that show. He's watched all the seasons and plans on watching the last season, and I'm like, I can't handle the violence. And I haven't watched any of it.
So, it is very violent.
Yeah. So, Bethany, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and away from your kids to be on.
Thanks. Thanks for joining us on a Sunday when I have built-in childcare, of your father.
Oh, yeah. Fun. Yeah. We actually have to go run by to go see if Jay left his AirPods at the office. So that's what I'm going to go ahead off to do. So, but Bridget.
Can't wait until tomorrow.
No, it can't. AirPods are very important, Bethany.
Gosh.
Okay. So we're going to go drive into the city just for that. Yeah.
Endeavor.
Yeah.
But Bridget, tell your significant others I say hi.
I will.
And your children, Bethany, and I can't wait to see them.
But Bridget,
Feeling is mutual.
Where can everybody find you on the internet?
Ricochet is the number one spot.
All right.
Do it up.
And Bridget, you're on hiatus.
I have
from
a podcast on Ricochet called Walk-ins Welcome, and I'm not on the internet, and I'm thinking of getting out of this business and moving to Sri Lanka and opening a burrito stand.
Oh, Sri Lanka probably needs a lot more burritos.
They don't have any burritos there.
Oh, then they definitely need more burritos.
I see a market.
That's a good idea. But everybody, go follow Southern Keeks on Twitter. She will be back hopefully next week.
Don't follow her. She skipped out on this podcast. Unfollow her. Send the mob.
Send the mob to harass her to get her act together. And you can find me on Twitter at Andrea and Ruth. And you can also subscribe to the ARC Digital newsletter, which I curate and send out at least once a week, if not twice a week. You can also find me on the Fifth Estate podcast as the news girl, relegated to my position as a news girl with Jay Caruso and Ben Howe. How can you possibly think I would elevate to anything above that? But thank you for watching us or listening. Watching us. What am I thinking? Thank you for listening to us for another week, and we will see you next time on another The Right Side podcast. Thanks. Bye. Soul, I came to this strange world.